Come on in.
Hey, welcome back to Taking It Down. We are the Alabama Takes Pop Culture Podcast. We tend to focus on movies and television and a smattering of other things. You can always go to thealabamatake.com for even more. And as you may know, one of our other podcasts is well into its first season at this point. Check out This Song Sucks wherever you get your podcast. If you need a description beyond that title, just know that it's a breakdown of a song at a time that the guys tend to think are awful. For our show today, we'll be chatting about some odds and ends before getting into both The Real World Homecoming, which is two episodes on Paramount Plus, and the new HBO Max show from producer Lena Dunham, Generation. That dropped its first three episodes all at once this Thursday. Well, joining me, as always, I got my friends. Thank God for them. Adam Morrow and Donovan Reinwald. But before I let them talk, I'll say that yesterday, my three-year-old daughter was asking me and my wife about Friends, and we were basically having to look at each other and shrug and say, well, Andy, we don't have friends.
Aw.
But that's not true. That's not true. I got you guys. I got you guys. We talk every Sunday, and it is a pleasure. Adam and Donovan, welcome, welcome.
Good to be here. Since we've admitted that we're talking on Sunday, can I just say, I hate this whole time change.
Oh, that's awful. Goodness.
Also, I didn't realize that this was a load-bearing friendship. That's a little more...
Too much pressure.
Put a little more pressure on me than I'm used to.
I mean, we're up at the crack of dawn talking to each other. I'd say it's load-bearing.
Daylight savings time has begun across the nation. Are we inching toward getting this appealed? Is this...
No, that's pie in the sky stuff. Ever getting rid of this, I think.
You want that shit? Move to Arizona.
That's true. True.
I feel like every time we do it, we get a little closer to just keeping daylight savings time going.
I thought you were going to say we get a little closer to dying, because I feel that way too.
No, that's the damn truth. Yes.
Well, that's just true.
Yeah, that's just fact. We talk COVID a lot, or we have for about a year now, to a year.
Yeah, this is our year episode, right? Probably. Yeah. And we started doing it every week. This is yeah.
We went from two times a month to once a week because of COVID, and we started kind of with COVID each episode since then almost. But am I mistaken that this would have been the week for South by Southwest?
Probably.
Right around there.
Yeah, this week or next week.
It seems to coincide with spring break, right?
Yeah, it usually does. For some reason, it's almost always the same week as UA's spring break. I don't know why that is, but it tended to be that way.
Did it hit you, Adam? Because you've gone to the last, what, five? Played. I should. Let me change that. You've played at the last five.
Yeah, it's odd. I think 2000. I've missed one or two since then, but like 2013 or 14 was when I started playing out there, and it's very odd for it to be spring. That feels like the start of music season.
Yeah.
You know, where like we're going to tour this summer, and because obviously summer touring is bigger than winter touring. So it's like it always feels like you get to see all your friends are in one place that you are usually kind of scattered. And yeah, it's very weird. Things are starting to turn green here in North Alabama, and I'm kind of used to like looking at the van, like, let's go. But we are still landlocked. Not for much longer, I don't think, but I'm feeling more optimistic this week than I have at any point in the last year.
I want to talk about that, but I do have one more question. You missed last year South by Southwest, but it was still like...
It was last minute.
Yeah, it was like last minute, and I remember talking to you, and I think Lee Baines...
Lee went
about
out.
It.
He was supposed to tour on his way there with the full band. And then,
And then he had
part of the band. Well, part of the band said, we can't risk it due to family member stuff. And so they pulled out. And so he went out acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
And we were supposed to be on the same bill, like Specklebird Lee. And I was psyched. I was like, this is going to be great. And yeah, he turned it around and went home. But I remember him texting me like, you know, when you go out there, you have some shows that are like your money shows, and that was a well-funded show to kind of help with the gas balance. Yeah, I mean, it was weird because it went from, you know, they canceled the official event, and this was like national news, and everybody's trying to gauge how seriously it's going to be taken because, you know, sports are still being played, blah, blah, blah. They canceled South by first. And I think musicians in general probably canceled all of their stuff first. Whatever that says about artists, I don't know. But first to cancel, probably the last ones back. Hmm. Yeah, it was an odd because it canceled and then people were trying to figure out like there was going to be an unofficial South by, which there always is like an unofficial South by kind of happening in the shadows of the official events. You know,
yeah,
a lot of fun. And people just thought, oh, it'll all be unofficial. And if we, at that point, people were kind of saying, like, if we get the flu, that's okay. This will be fun. And then obviously every day it just got more and more apparent that things were not going to be normal.
Yeah, I vividly remember you, it was either you or Lee, so I guess it's not that vivid, but I vividly remember the actual conversation, just don't remember with whom, saying, I think they should cancel South by Southwest. I think, you know, I hope they do. I'm a little concerned. Was that you?
I think I definitely felt that way. And
okay,
I think he did too. It just became clear, like, this is really stupid. And, you know, this is before people we realized were, like, openly anti-mask. We didn't even know that the mask was, like, the thing, you know?
Now, yeah, so, nobody had an yes.
Yeah.
We weren't clued in on that.
I just had this vision of, like, an entourage from the Shoals going out there and being around people from all across the country, and then us being like the Trojan horse that brought it back to North Alabama,
yeah,
or
the
something.
Disease, you know, vector,
not,
yeah.
Yeah, like not understanding how it, I mean, that's a very simplistic way to view it now, but like a year ago, we didn't know anything, so.
No, you were.
It was weird.
You were absolutely right, because folks from Greenwich, Connecticut ended up being COVID super spreaders. They all went to, rich people all went to one party, traveled internationally, spread it all over the place. You were absolutely right.
It was odd.
Once
and it
again,
was,
rich people.
We mm-hmm. held off. Like, I didn't book a place to stay until fairly, because I was, you know, trying to be cheap and like, who do I know out there that I can crash with? And I started looking, and like all the hotels started being super cheap. And Airbnbs are super cheap. It was very surreal to watch. So for like 2 days, it was like, this is going to be a less crowded, less douchey South by. It'll be cheaper. And then it just kind of came crashing down.
One of the other things I clearly remember is you and I are in a text message with our friend Jeff. And you saying just a statement that sort of haunted me in a way that's, he said, oh, one of us will definitely get it. And this was way back in March, where we just saw how it was starting to spread. And he said, we were thinking, well, how bad is this thing going to get? And he said, I bet one of us will get it.
I am still shocked that one of us has not. I feel like we need to knock on
wood.
Yeah, that we know of.
True.
I only know a handful of folks who have gotten it. I mean, my parents got it. A few friends around me have gotten it. Unfortunately, everybody was okay. Some folks are still dealing with long-term effects, but yeah, I assumed one of those. I mean, between, like, you know, I didn't know that I wasn't going to play shows for a whole year, and so it's like, well, I'm going to be in some compromised situation. So there's me, you with being around a larger population than most folks, you know, with your job. It's like, well, somebody's gonna get exposed there. Jeff, kind of mm-hmm. the same thing. I just figured it was circling, it was coming for us.
Yeah, I honestly, at this point, I think about it's 60-40 of the people that I know, mm-hmm. especially if you count people I work with. I think it's a 40% have had it and 60 have not. That's my guess.
Yeah,
but it does seem like live music is going to be making its comeback.
I think so. You know, there was I think Friday was a 24-hour period where over 4 million people got vaccinated. So we're on our way to being able to do stuff.
One of the dates that kept popping up on my Soch timeline is September 17th. That's the first date for this Life is Beautiful festival in Las Vegas. But right after I saw that, I started seeing even more dates being posted earlier than September 17th, as if I thought that was going to be the show that opened the door to a lot of live music. But I think there's even more coming.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I know people with fancy booking agents and the whole setup that are getting offered shows in April, even, you know, like outdoor distanced shows still. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. You got to think, if it's, Biden said this week it's open on May 1st, you got to think by June, people want to go out and they can do it safely, and musicians want to make money, or theaters want to make more. Yeah, all these things that we've missed. It's hard to picture. I think June is the ramp up, and then by the 4th of July, when people realize it's okay, you know, God forbid there's some variant lurking somewhere that'll ruin this timeline. But I think by the 4th of July, everybody's going to realize, just like the level of optimism that's ramped up in the last week makes me think that on a months long trajectory puts us somewhere close to normal in late summer.
It is palpable, the optimistic feeling.
It's amazing what can happen when you have like the tiniest glimmer of a plan.
Yeah.
Instead of just
competent,
like,
leadership.
We're gonna throw needles at people and they'll disappear.
Yeah.
As long as people do get vaccinated, that would also, from what I've been reading, is that will also tamp down any of the variants from getting too out of hand.
Yeah, and just contain them before they can flare up.
Yeah. Also in music, something else has come on my radar this week, and I'm really dying to hear what you guys think, but I'll just clear the lane for myself here and just rant. I'm probably months behind the news here, but these NFTs, which are non-fungible tokens, I'm assuming that's how you say it, are the most recent in the category that we've come to call the Lord's coming back real soon.
I love this category.
It's such a useful category.
These goddamn things are so hard to explain, but as far as I can tell, I'm going to try. They're like these one-of-a-kind digital something or other that artists sell, like a barcode that you'd be buying somehow, don't ask me, and that would get you the piece of art. And I think on NPR it was described as, you're not buying a picture, you're buying property rights to the picture. Like, so that's the NPR article was really focused on art. So there could be a lot of copies of it, but you would have a special something say in owning it. I don't know. I know the Kings of Leon are doing this with their next album. I believe the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, is doing this for whatever the hell reason he's got, like with a tweet. There's some, one of the big ones is an iconic image of LeBron James dunking. What the hell is this? Why are we doing this?
So somebody sent me, I'm still catching up on this. This is only in my radar for like the last few months. Not few months, but like since this year started. So
I'd never heard of it till that thing sold for however, what was like 5 million or whatever a couple days ago.
Insane.
What are we doing? What are we doing
here? I got down on my knees and started praying.
As well you should.
It popped up on my radar because it's been a thing in, you mentioned LeBron James, like they're basically basketball trading cards that people are putting heavy value on. And I, you know, they sent it to me and they're like, how is this going to translate into music? And I have no idea. And then weeks later, Kings of Leon announced their thing. I still don't understand it. I mean, it's like applying the same value system that Bitcoin has in a way.
Absolutely. It really is. But
Bitcoin's like easier to understand because it's like purely transactional, right? Like if you have more of this,
for me. Then
as more and more places accept Bitcoin payment, it's that its value is easier to understand as it becomes rarer and rarer, I guess. And I don't follow the NFT thing. Is very confusing to me. Are they going to try to sell like live performances or like, you know, things that they could put rarity on? But people who, you know, give a crap about live performances, those cultures are like, the band cultures are already so share friendly that I can't really see them starting to charge or trying to make things rare. I don't know.
I don't either.
My only comment is it's clear that money has no inherent value, merely a social value.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're getting into with this.
Yeah.
The philosophical nature of money, and I can't barely get my head around the fact that I have a bank account and money appears there every month.
Doesn't Bitcoin, computers mining Bitcoin produce as much CO2 as like Denmark or something? No, the Netherlands. So like, is this going to be one of those things where it's like,
okay, I'm going to get real stupid for a second. What the hell does it mean to mine Bitcoin?
Well,
Trading it?
Is that another name? That's how you get new Bitcoins. Mine the blockchain. I don't understand it. It's the reason graphics cards are sold out too.
Yeah.
People are buying them for these computers.
Fixed amount of Bitcoin. This is like a vast oversimplification, which is the only way I can understand it.
Me too.
You know, there's like X amount of Bitcoin that was created by enough people that no one had authority over it. So it just is in the world. And that rarity makes it have value, and it's not run by a single entity like a government or whatever, then that's Bitcoin.
Well, and you get it by your computer solving math problems, right? Like, I'm really oversimplifying, but basically it's like your computer does the crossword and you might eventually get a Bitcoin.
I had no idea about this aspect. Here's what I thought Bitcoin was. I thought it was just like a piece of computer code that you owned and you just gave it to someone else or something.
So there's a graphic card shortage in, you know, like folks that play computer games on their computers or whatever can't get some of the most advanced graphic cards because this stuff, people are using them to build supercomputers to just run all the time to get Bitcoin. So like, people get so mad at me when I leave my car running all day, but it's like, you know what? It could be worse.
All day? What the fuck are you doing?
You don't want to be cold when he gets in it.
I want to make sure it's nice and warm / cold.
He wakes up and first thing he does is he go cranks his car, and then at 4 p.m. he realizes, oh, I left the car running again.
Every day. People get mad at me, but at least I'm not Elon Musk over here with Bitcoins.
Mining Bitcoin. I had no idea this was a thing. I am going to...
This is why the Lord's coming back real soon.
That's the line. Well, let's get out of this stuff that's rattling my brain way too much and bring it down a notch. Let's talk about The Real World Homecoming, which is on Paramount Plus. What it is a reunion of the very first cast from the very first season, even bringing them back into the same loft they had shared in Soho, New York, those seven strangers. Two episodes are currently up on the streaming service, and I have watched one of them.
So I'm going to ask, like, for this one and for the next one, sell me on this, because I have no emotional connection to the real world. So as someone who's like, do you have to have watched the original one, or could I sit down and say this is an interesting show on its own merits?
I will say, as someone who's in that position, who did not, you know, Blaine, you were in the crosshairs for like who the original show was for.
it was addictive television at age 15. Yep.
Yeah, and I was too young to experience that with this season, and I think we're going to get into this, but I, you know, not having watched it, but understanding the cultural phenomenon that it was, they do an excellent job of like placing the show and you get to know these people, and they give you the relevant facts and scenes from before. And I have thought that it was completely fascinating.
Yes. I think it's a brilliant move to do the homecoming from the first season rather than try to jumpstart a new season with a bunch of 19 and 20 year olds, because when you get this very first season back, not only were they breaking new ground in television that they had no idea that they were doing, but you get 30 years worth of maturity and change and sometimes stagnation that's exposed. It gets really heady, but the first episode does not. I think the first episode is just full of hugs and this notion of, holy shit, we had no idea what we were doing, and looking back, it's blowing our mind that we were laying groundwork for television for 30 or 35 years.
Yeah, and it, to me, these people in particular, you know, I read an AL.com thing with Julie from Birmingham, and she talks about that filming it was one experience. You know, people ask about the real world experience. And she said, well, it was two things, which I guess is true of all reality TV, but, you know, filming it is one thing, and then it airing was a completely different experience. And I guess filming it, they had no frame of reference for what it was going to be, which is, you know, makes what they did have like an innocence and purity to it that is impossible to replicate. And I don't know, they're just such those relationships. It's not like they attempted to be cast on the real world 10 years later. You know, there's something like really natural about seeing these people together. It's fascinating to me.
So it's like almost, I mean, what went through my head was playing for the camera, but everyone plays for the camera. But
well, there are cameras.
It's like the first time where they're not playing characters, right? Like people are like, oh, I'm going to get on this show. I'll be the mean one or the fun one or whatever.
Yeah. And they talk a bit about that. But I mean, they, you know, they couldn't even, they show their interview footage and they're like, is this going to be like 90210 or is this going to be like, you know, what is this? And they couldn't understand. They're like, I think it's a documentary, but all of them said, well, I'm just going to get 3 free months in New York and they're going to film it. You know, they all had like an artistic bent thing that they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And they thought that's what it was. Yeah, it's very interesting. As someone who grew up in like the, of course, there's a real world season on, you know, just like constantly existing alongside like later, like Sweet 16 and shows like that. Mm-hmm. Seeing it at this version was really, really interesting.
It's very funny that they either thought it was going to be a version of 90210 or a documentary. They could not land on just reality television. That was not in the vocabulary in those old clips of them being interviewed. But you're right. Most of them did come in with some self-promotion in mind. We've got a couple of songwriters and singers. We had Heather, who already was established rapper in New York, especially. We've got Julie, who seemed to want to be a dancer or an actress or both. Eric was already in modeling pretty heavily. And so they all came in. Kevin was a poet. He had already done some writing, and he was a poet and speaker and early activist. Each of them probably thought, oh, this is going to be a documentary kind of sort of about me, and I can push myself and my career. But as far as being thrown in a room with people, you know, real world or even the challenge since then, being thrown in a room with people and trying to have some discussion and drama out of it, they had no idea about that.
Is it fair to ask, too, like, this is kind of like, because it was so groundbreaking, right? Do they ever, is there any kind of reflection of like, is this good? Like, is reality TV good for the world? Is that, there is not one single thing you can blame, say, our last president on. But I think a contributing factor is that people did not, like, thought the character he played on TV was real. And, you know, with The Apprentice going being as big a hit it was, that's the image they carried in their minds. And I've met people who do not seem to understand that reality TV is staged.
They, you know, they address that. I think it, my guess is it's going to get that conversation will again arise.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Kevin, who is the, he's a black poet and he's full-time activist now, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But he mentions the fact that they've had a reality show president. That was one of the lines in the first episode. They quickly switch topics. They don't even mention Trump by name, I don't think. But I feel like they're going to probably acknowledge some of these things. A lot of the first episode was just them being amazed at being in the same room with one another and just saying, we haven't seen each other in 20 years.
Yeah,
last time we all hung out. And it was that was interesting enough, but they do also venture into the conversations of, this was so huge. How could we have ever imagined?
Mm-hmm.
They haven't gotten into the conversations that they are probably going to be known for or were known for, especially in that first season. Kevin alludes to them saying that we got into a lot of conversations about race the first season. I'm excited to return to these and see how everybody is. I'm paraphrasing him horribly, but he kind of says, you know, some of the things were left a little unresolved, and it's time to answer for some of the things that were said.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty interesting that he specifically has a moment where he says, you know, Rodney King was Black Lives Matter and Anita Hill was Me Too. You know what I mean? These things.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see people who were very engaged at the time kind of say nothing really changes. You just put new names on them.
Mm. Yeah.
Or them kind of weigh and measure how much things have changed. They do get in. I watched episode two.
Okay.
I'll spoil a bit. They show them conversations that they had. You know, which is, I can't imagine being shown myself at 19, 20, 21 talking. That sounds like a nightmare. So I'm glad that other people are experiencing this instead of me.
Well, the really cool thing about it is that it does remind me of some conversations I was having in 92 and 93 and what I was like in 92, because there was some profound stuff from Kevin in that 1992 episode where he and Julie were arguing on the street about race. And it's just scary that I couldn't hear it. My mind was not in the, it didn't have the education it needed to hear what he was saying beyond the words that that was coming out.
There's an interest, the episode two just goes head on into this. And
good. I'm excited to.
There's moments with Julie where it seems like progress has been made, you know? And they even talk to her daughter, or, you know, because they'll call home and, you know, now they're not calling their parents on the little landline phone. They're calling their kids, which is fascinating.
It truly is.
But, you know, they talk to the conversation with her daughter, and Kevin's reaction to that is very interesting. And they also show another conversation about race that happened, and everyone, they're all sitting on those couches kind of like measuring how far they've come and who, you know, all of them just, they're like, Kevin was right. Everybody says that in some way except one person. And that reaction, I mean, there's like a kind of an old school argument where someone's not really listening to them. It's good.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about from the previews. I'm really glad that the producers, with the help of the editors, know that my memory from 30 years ago would be shaky at best. And they packed plenty of old shots and scenes to help my memory, my old ass. I was not going to dig up the first season and rewatch it. And I think they know that that's not going to happen. So Donovan, they will, whatever they're going to reference or it seems pertinent to a conversation that they're having, they show clips of that. And it's, you know, that's fun and exciting.
So you get the context.
You get the context, but it's also kind of fun to see them 30 years younger and just to see that. That's fun.
Some of them are unrecognizable.
A little.
All these years later. And then some of them look very much the same, which is, like, that's like a surface level interesting thing, but still.
It is, but it's fun. It's really fascinating to see someone in their 40s, though, return to a serious topic like race or class, and then have that footage of what they used to say or think. It's painlessly getting to see yourself in a way, have a discussion with your younger self or examine what you used to think at, you know, 10, 20 or 30 years ago.
I think that aspect is like a whole new dimension of reality TV that's fascinating to me, because I feel like we all have these conversations with ourselves of, like, you know, how much you can change or progress or all these things, and to see it documented. There's no way in hell I would sign up to do it, but it's fun because you would hope that we're all growing all the time. It's like one of the central themes of life, right? And to see not just like their interactions at a certain point, but how you can change. You know, even we keep saying Kevin was right about a lot of stuff. He says how much he's grown in terms of his ability to communicate and to say, it's not just to get his point across. It's like there's a maturity that comes with, like, you can be right and still be wrong in the way that you deliver it.
It's really good. I'm looking forward to getting more episodes under my belt. Oh, it was really sad that Eric couldn't join them in person.
Yeah, but it's an interesting like time document. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like if people watch this in the future, it is a bummer that he's not there, but it's like, oh, that is very 2020, 2021.
You know, in the opening minutes, you find out that he's going to be kind of zooming in or blasting in on their TV because he had tested positive for COVID. I don't know, Donovan, did we sell you on it?
Yeah, you actually really kind of sold me on the here's who I was then and here's who I am now aspect on it. Because it is kind of like Adam said, sort of a fundamental question of self, right? Like, or it can kind of bring that up. Like, am I, am I more myself now than I was when I was 19? Am at the self that I am now and the self that's 19 equally myself? Is it, it kind of maybe causes you to reflect on that in a way that we don't often get a chance to in our day to day, right? Because we're just caught up in our moments.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Yeah, and the show absolutely allowed me to do that as I was watching it. So, yeah, I recommend it, especially if you watched those first few seasons of The Real World. You're going to really get a kick out of seeing some of that stuff. Let's go into our break for now. And we'll come back on the other side to talk about the new HBO Max show, Generation. All right, thank you very much for listening to us. We'll use this break to let you know that our weekly coverage of MTV's The Challenge continues each and every Thursday, with head writer T.D. Wood bringing you a breakdown and analysis of the events there. You can find that on thealabamatake.com, as well as links to new podcasts from the site, This Song Sucks. Also, on the site, if you click shop, you can get a link to our Tee Public store where you can find t-shirts and hoodies, mugs, various other things for the Alabama Take, including our newest edition, the Done Up Real Good t-shirt. Get yourself one of those. Let's get back into today's show, though. Okay, we are back. We're going to talk about the new HBO show Generation from producer Lena Dunham, who's done a lot of work with HBO, with her show Girls especially. So this show came with a little controversy. There was this online uproar about the use of actual dead cats in a biology scene.
Which is ridiculous. You want them to cut up live cats? You sickos.
Exactly. That's my theory. Anyway, let's just get into the show itself, the parts that we do know a lot more about. The show is about a California high school set of students, particularly Chester, Greta, Riley, Nathan, and his sister, Naomi. I've watched all three of the episodes that dropped. I watched them back to back last night. Same. Adam, how much? Did you really?
I did.
Like back to back, like I did?
Yeah, I did.
I found myself just like, it's going to be weird because I found myself wanting to watch the next episode immediately, but I might say some things that would go against that. So
yeah, I don't think it's good. I'll say that from the outset.
I don't either. And here's some reasons why. Let's get into spoilers. If you haven't seen the first three episodes, they are all three on HBO Max right now, with more to come each Thursday. So I thought it did. This is kind of getting annoying to me, where shows start with this huge pivotal event, and then in the opening scene, and it'll last 5 or 6 minutes, and then it'll say, but 3 months before this.
But do you like it when the character looks directly at the camera and says, yeah, that's me. I bet you're wondering how I got here. Because that part's always fun.
I think that would have helped this show. but it starts with...
This is the baby, right?
Yeah. Did you know about this? Because I
read a review, and I was like, this is poison for me.
No, it... Yeah, we got a teenage girl sitting outside the bathroom waiting on her friend. It sounds almost like she's having sex. Then it almost sounds like she's dying. Then it transitions into her saying, finally admitting she's having a baby in there in the bathroom. And her friend freaks out and looks up Wikipedia pages on how to give birth. And then it goes, boom, 3 months later. So,
can I just talk about this opening scene? And There were things that I really liked about it. Number one, right off the bat, when someone comes up and tries to go into the bathroom and she's like, someone's getting sick in there, and the person is persistent and she said, there's diarrhea everywhere, I lost it. If you say diarrhea in a television program, I'm going to laugh hard.
If you say diarrhea in real life.
It's hilarious. That's the funniest word in the English language.
I diarrhea it in the tub.
See? So that was very funny. I thought her frantically searching on her phone and like the YouTube video not loading and then getting on WikiHow was funny. That was...
Yeah, she was going to watch a YouTube video on how to give birth, and it had an ad before it.
So many ads. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of that was, like, to me, classic Lena Dunham humor. And, like, in a good way. Like, the things that make girls quirky and funny. And then it kind of went into, you're talking about the 3 months earlier thing. The whole way that this first, I mean, I guess you call it a pilot, even though it clearly was the first episode. The way that it set itself up.
Yeah, it was titled Pilot.
Which feels a little bullshitty, but I guess you have to call it that. So the way that they're like trying to intertwine these storylines felt like it was doing a little too much for me.
Me too. It felt as though it wanted to do a lot of heavy lifting in a record-setting time. And I'm not sure. No, and it's just not earned that way, I don't think, to use a word that's a little overused. I find myself not caring about these teens in the first couple episodes quite yet, as much as they think I'm going to be invested in them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Natalie said something that I thought kind of hit the nail on the head, that as you went through the episode and heard the same bits of dialogue over and over again, it started to feel
there's some overlap in the first episode.
Yeah, they started to feel like secondary characters in a video game, you know, like you just kind of hear them say the same thing over and over again. And that nobody really, I mean, there were funny moments and there were, you're kind of interested in like the plot, but I'm not sure, they're just kind of moving like pieces at this point.
I agree. So what the first episode does a lot is, well, before, you know, as I mentioned, it does the thing where we're going to start 3 months into the future and then back up and tell you how we got here. Only giving you a snippet of that story. But it also does this thing where it does, it's very Tarantino-esque. I think of Tarantino. I know he didn't start it, but I always think of Pulp Fiction, how those stories overlapped a little on the fringes. And then when you got to see all three or four of the stories, you saw the full picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what it does. And that, I think, was good for me. As a viewer, because it held my interest a little. But anyway, from the bathroom scene, the bathroom baby scene, which we don't even know who's in the bathroom stall. We don't find that out until the episode 3.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the intro of every episode.
You're right. Much like Better Call Saul has been doing with future, or present day, I should say, present day Saul. So we get into Chester going to the guidance counselor in the first episode. We get an introduction of him. He's going to be one of our adults in this show, Sam. I don't know. I did not like the flirtation Chester is trying to establish with his guidance counselor teacher.
It's a little weird.
That felt
forced.
Forced and odd. I don't want it to be one of those shows where the teacher has a fling with the student. I didn't want that. I don't want to watch that show. So I will say this. This show has a lot to do in order to keep it contrasted with another HBO show, Euphoria. That, I feel like Euphoria, and people can very well blast me for these opinions because they are two different shows and they're trying two different things. But I think Euphoria handles nearly the exact same things in the exact same age range to a much higher quality. And if you compare the two pilot episodes, they are in stark contrast of quality. One is achieving immediate connections to the audience, and the other is just saying, here, be entertained by these people.
Yeah.
I can't understand the thinkers at HBO saying to themselves, we need generation on our streaming service, or we need it on HBO, because I'm telling you, it has a lot of the same quirks and ticks of Euphoria, but Euphoria is just handling it so much more gingerly and with more depth.
That makes sense to me.
Also, with Generation, what it's going to boil down to is if your favorite character, because there's a bunch of characters to keep up with, but and it seems to be that your favorite character is going to come down to who's the least annoying.
They're all pretty annoying.
Yeah, they are. So who's the least annoying? Let's suss through this, Adam. I'm going to go with Greta. She seems has to have the most sympathetic story. Her mother has been deported. She's got a crush on a friend. She seems to be either bisexual or lesbian, and I don't think she's fully come out yet. So her crush is sort of having to be suppressed a little. Who else gets the not that annoying as the others vote for you?
I think it's pretty much just her. everyone else has like some profoundly annoying things going on.
I would give second place to Nathan.
Nathan is the brother, right?
Uh-huh. Brother who also, again, he is bisexual but has not announced to anyone that he is bisexual. And he's flirted around with his sister's boyfriend.
Oh, done a little more than flirted.
Well, do we want to say for sure?
I mean, I feel like if we're going to talk all three, let's talk all. If we're talking characters, we have to get the full picture as we have it right now.
So Nathan was going to go down on his sister's boyfriend, but before he could even do anything, the boyfriend goes off in his eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he runs away.
And he runs away with the gunk in his eye. And I'm going to give credit where it's due. It was such a clever bit to have Nathan and his sister Naomi have to say, "Welcome to the Flying Seaman," when on that boat for the wedding in the next episode.
Oh, that cracked me up. And I think the funniest bits to me are most consistent character. She got pretty annoying at that rehearsal, but their mom has made me laugh quite a bit.
Trying to be in touch with Gen Z and failing miserably.
When she goes on her monologue about I'm a fully formed person and like starts saying like I appreciate modern art, I appreciate the Spanish language, and then like a few episodes later starts saying like, you know, adios and things like that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, very self-unaware type of mom.
The Flying Seaman joke, very funny. Here for it. Having a party on a boat, I mean, you can't do that in Southern California and not make me think of Arrested Development.
Jesus, yes. That's so true.
Which was a little tough because you're talking about the gold standard and something that I have found lacking so far, but that's okay.
If the show would really attempt to lean into just comedy, like with the Flying Seaman and with... you know, what you're talking about with the mother. I thought it was hilarious in the second episode with Greta having autocorrect trouble with Riley's Instagram page. She just wanted to say that's a cool picture, but she ends up writing things like, I'm wet or something. You're like, totally.
Yeah, something really embarrassing.
Really embarrassing that you wouldn't want to send anyone.
I think she wrote morning and it was moaning. I think
that's right. That's what it was. That was a good one. If it would just lean into those things, not only would it separate itself from Euphoria, but I think it would be a little better.
Yeah, I mean, it's set up to be better, in my opinion, with the writing, and it's a pretty compelling setup of characters. You mentioned Riley. Riley's not annoying. I think she's maybe more interesting than the other ones. I mean, another funny moment that I thought was very self-aware was the party, everybody dancing to that I Don't Care song. What's the name of that song? That Donovan, you remember the famous girls episode where she goes on the Coke bender
and she's dancing around in that. You mean.
Do you want to switch shirts? And she like puts on a mesh shirt, which was hilarious. And Lena Dunham was during Girls was like the master of comical female nudity, which was a funny way to claim something that had been very male. I remember her talking about like in The Hangover when what's his name jumps out of the trunk naked and like it's funny. Mm-hmm. And girls never get to do that. And so she kind of like claimed that space, which I thought was very funny. But in this show, all of the the middle-aged people are dancing to that song. And it's, that was a funny, like, if you know the whole picture, her kind of like taking a dig at herself, like she doesn't get to be the young quirky one anymore. Her song has been claimed by this lame party.
The show does sort of pull you in. I'll have to admit that I'm not crazy about it, but it is drawing me in. I may, that could be because of the melodrama to it all. Like, who's going to end up with whom? It seems like several of the characters are all either crushing on one another or sleeping with one another or making out with one another. And it matters not what their sex is. Like, most of them seem to be bisexual. And so you really don't know who might end up with whom or where that's going to go. Because
I mean,
of that.
A love triangle with a brother and sister, that's pretty Faulknerian, if you ask me.
I don't know. Who's the least annoying is a pretty dire metric to base a show. You've got a shaky foundation here. It's a dire metric.
That is a dire metric, and I'm glad I went with it, because right now I'm only returning to the story probably to see what the hell happens with the baby in the mall. I really want to know how the hell they get out of that situation and where it goes, which is only 10 minutes of each episode. So another dire metric, perhaps.
Maybe it's the baby that pops out and says, I guess you're wondering how I got here.
if they did that, man, I would be sold. So that's Generation. If you're looking for it, the T is actually a plus sign. Ha ha, right?
They're so clever. This Gen Z, they're so clever. They got it all figured out.
The show was actually written by a 19-year-old and her dad. Legitimate Gen Z connection, but
there was some interesting backstory there. Like, I read this interview where the dad said, well, we'll let her run with the show idea and she can pitch it. And if the lesson that she learns is that people say no all the time, no matter how good you think the idea is, then like, that's a good life lesson for my kid to learn. And next thing you know, Lena Dunham is signing on to executive produce. So it's like, well, it's a win-win, I guess.
That almost makes me not want to like it, being a grumpy old man who doesn't like when people don't have to pay their dues. But hey, I'm still going to watch it. I'm going to see where it goes. I'm very tentative on recommending this show, because I would say go watch Euphoria. If you want to watch something like this, go watch Euphoria. And I know that's unfair. They're two different shows, but that's my final say on the matter. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to compare the two. After the first episode, me and Natalie said to each other, I don't think this is good. And then I said, can we watch the second one just so we can solidify that opinion? She said, yeah. And then between the second and third, we didn't even look at each other and just let it autoplay. So I don't know. That says something. I don't know what it is, but we were sucked in, at least.
What I'm seeing online is that people who are in the Gen Z age range seem to really like it a lot.
Interesting.
And people older don't.
It's poorly reviewed, for sure.
It's poorly reviewed, but most critics are not Gen Z. So
that's true. I think maybe the things, it's fun to see yourself on TV, right? Or like to see yourself represented, or it's flies in contrast to, like, I don't know if they think the millennial culture is dominating things right now. I don't know. But yeah, that doesn't mean that the characters are anything but moving pieces, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is what you guys needed, was three white old guys telling you whether or not to watch Generation. Hey, but I'm going to continue to watch it.
Yeah, I probably will too.
So that's all we have for this week. Thank you so much for joining us and listening. Go give us a review on your podcast app, please. Why don't you? Next week, it's highly likely that we're going to be talking about the Zack Snyder Justice League. Or at least I am.
God in heaven.
You better start watching it now.
I'm going to talk about this because I can really get revved up when I hate something.
I was going to say, Blaine will talk about it, and my role will be to get mad.
Well, trust me, the anger will be shared. Angry. And we might talk about how gritty it is. You never know. Join us. And I bet you we're going to talk a little bit about the MCU Disney Plus new show, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So we got some things on the docket next week. Come back for that or subscribe and you won't miss an episode. We'll talk to you all later.